You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
It is a chilly but beautiful morning as we welcome you back to Up North News Radio, brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends on the Civic Media Radio Network at 7:06 on this Tuesday morning, April 15th. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we will talk to Sean O'Malley, a Wisconsin native who had a good career on Wall Street in financial compliance. He knows the rules, he knows the markets, and while we've talked about trade and tariffs before, we are going to talk as well about the sell-off in the bond market. And I'm no expert, and I'm thinking a lot of other people might not be experts, but one thing I know was that bonds that were put out by the U.S. government were pretty much the safest, most guaranteed investment on planet Earth. And then that changed last week because of a lack of global confidence in the U.S. government's willingness to pay its debts after watching what Donald Trump has done to farmers and export-import companies and manufacturers and everything else. So we will talk more about that with Sean O'Malley coming up at the bottom of the hour. Chad Holmes will wrap things up before his show takes over on 98.9 WXCO in Wausau or on the Civic Media app. But before all of that, Greg Bach is here. Dan Hagen from Newswatch 12 in Rhinelander is here. And meteorologist Brittany Merlot is here as well. And so before we play a game called Cars versus Cheese, Brittany's got a forecast for us that, again, has your occasional 20s and 30 degree temperature lows in there. But we're not getting snow. Oh, wait. Dan Hagen's telling us there was snow outside his window this morning. Or isn't there? Dan.
Oh, was that my cue? I thought yes. Brittany was
there
like...
There's snow outside your window,
yeah,
Dan.
Yeah, Brittany, I got a... Pratt said you're something about a flirtation of a flurry. So I have some snow outside my window here in Rhinelander and even more in Vilas County, north of me.
Oh my gosh. It never ends there, does it? It's a whole different world in Vilas and Iron County, I think.
Well, we already knew
Absolutely.
That
April
from a weather standpoint. Yes.
Yes. Very common.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what do we have to look forward to, Ms. Merlot?
Well, you know, a few flurries are still flying by the Great Lakes, so up north by Lake Superior and into the Fox Valley and a little few places by Milwaukee, but no accumulations from those. Those are just, you know, for look, for show, just to give you that little one more time, I guess. But as we go through our day today, we are going to gradually become sunny. It'll start, obviously, into the western part of the state, moving central throughout the afternoon. I think you're going to be stuck under more clouds far north and far east today. But high temperatures will make it to the low 50s far southwest. We're looking at mid-40s for a big chunk of the state, pretty much from Milwaukee through Eau Claire. And then low 30s far northeast, of course, where it's a whole different world over there. Breezy today, though, still winds pumping out of the northwest, gusting up to about 30 miles per hour. So the state is still in a very high fire danger, especially south. But all of us, avoid burning, watch sparks, don't toss cigarette butts. We've already had 68 wildfires over the weekend and yesterday, burning 135 acres. So let's be careful today. Those winds are still whipping. We are going to be dry and comfortable tomorrow, mid-50s to low 60s as a high-pressure system builds in. A beautiful day tomorrow. I cannot wait. And then Thursday, we start off beautiful, but another system moves on in. It's going to bring some showers, some thunderstorms by Thursday night, and even into our Friday before we dry things out for a gorgeous weekend.
All right. Very nice. Let's see, before I get to Rob and Tigerton, I did get one other request. I believe it was from Alicia here asking if you could work your magic for Friday. I don't want to have rain that day.
And that's right.
Alicia's in Northeast Wisconsin. So
Northeast Wisconsin, okay.
Yeah, wave whatever magic wand you can for that. Meanwhile, from Rob, he says, good morning from Tigerton. It is cloudy and 34 degrees. We had a few flurries overnight. I got my weather spotter certificate. Back in the 1970s, it was Saturday night between Hee Haw or Lawrence Welk. He was normally watching Hee Haw. We were talking to Dan. Dan was not familiar with Hee Haw in our last
Brittany,
segment.
Brittany, do you know Hee Haw? Am I the only person completely
No idea. No clue.
I don't believe that for a moment, Brittany Merlot.
What? I don't know what it is.
Wow. Okay. Anyway, back to Rob.
Apparently, I'm the only one who grew up cultured. All right.
Hey, Brittany, did you grow up watching SpongeBob? I mean, let's try to exclude these other two for once, right?
I know, seriously, right? No, I was more like Sesame Street age, but my sister was definitely
I watched the first episode of Sesame Street in 1969, you punks. More from Robin Tigerton.
Get off his lawn.
The Embarrass River ATV and UTV campground opens up on May 1st, he says. And when my family farmed back in the day, our biggest tractor had an 8-track cassette player. My dad always played polka music tapes on the 8-track in the tractor. That wins the day. Forget Hee Haw. Forget everything else. You've had an 8-track in your tractor. That's it.
That's
luxury, man.
My grandmother had an extensive 8-track collection, and somewhere in the early, like 1993, we just told her, we're like, hey, you want to sell these? Or get rid of them? You can't buy anymore. She goes, what do you mean? She goes, well, they don't make 8-tracks anymore. She goes, that's not true. They still make them. And she was mad at us for telling her this.
Oh.
Yeah, she was special.
Yeah, there are definitely some Neil Diamond and Glenn Campbell albums I feel like could still sing in their entirety because of the songs that are on there. Not necessarily this one was on there, but if it were, I know that I would serenade my mom.
I am a lineman for the county.
Hey, we got a little Brittany in there this time. Look at that.
Nice.
Look at that. Progress.
Dan's just trying so hard to be like, everyone here is so old.
Who is Glenn Campbell? Yes, exactly. Let's go to something a little bit more contemporary. Dan, you drive cars, right? Dan, you like cheese, right?
Until they took my license away, yeah.
I'm sorry, what?
No, I was, never mind. Yes, I drive cars and eat cheese all the time.
I thought, boy, do we have a story from local law enforcement up there? But no, okay. This was the craziest thing that I saw on social media yesterday. And this was from, you know, we'll just say a data nerd who likes to occasionally plot things out in ways that you wouldn't have thought of. And he shows all of his math, and it's super cool. And it's price per pound cars versus cheese. So if I told you that on everything that he measured, the most expensive one was, let me look at my graph here, roughly $150 per pound, would I be talking about a Ferrari or a Roquefort cheese? Where's my game show music when I need it? I'll help you out. The correct answer on this one is the Ferrari. The Ferrari actually is worth more per pound. However, after you get the usual cars are up at the top, Ferrari, Lamborghini, Rolls Royce, and Porsche. The next thing on the list is a Roquefort cheese, which costs you upwards of $32 per pound.
Whoa.
There's then the Mercedes-Benz S-Class, which comes in at about $25 per pound, followed by Gruyere cheese, ooh, Gorgonzola, and then the Range Rover and the Chevy Corvette Stingray
are
coming in next at about $21 per pound. Needless to say, we're not comparing Velveeta slices over here, okay? And we're not comparing my first car as 73 Plymouth Fury, because both of those come in, you know, less than the cost of moldy cheese. But Dan, what was your first car?
The Lincoln Town Car, given to me by my grandpa.
With the 8-track.
I've been driving one of those. That's cool.
You said it had a cassette deck, right?
It had a cassette player, yeah.
Yes.
And it had three seats in the front. It was just like a perfect. Yep. Yeah.
Nice.
I love that. Let's see. So then we've got a good Fontina cheese is worth more per pound than a Tesla Model S.
Wow. Huh?
A good brie will cost you more per pound than a Cadillac Escalade or a BMW. And a good Gouda, which I would assume you would get at Marietta over in Thorpe here, a good Gouda will run you about $11, $12 per pound as opposed to a Ford Mustang GT, which retails for about $11 per pound.
So all said this, can I just walk into a dealership with some cheese and be like, what's my trade-in value?
For real.
I don't know about the trade-in value, but somebody did comment on how, well, you could either get a four-year lease on this vehicle, or you could eat 3 ounces of this cheese every day for 4 years, and, you know, which one would be the better value for you?
My doctor says get a car.
Yeah.
It just might work out, but I just love the fact that this guy went through all of these cheeses, calculated the price per pound. He lists the weights of all these cars and their prices work out that price per pound. And by the way, way at the bottom here, there's the Toyota Corolla, and it is a bit more expensive than your standard cheddar or mozzarella, which comes way at the bottom of the list, but because we produce so much cheddar and mozzarella that, you know, you get it for a relatively low price.
I just
want to
know what this guy was sitting around going, you know what? You know what the world needs? A very detailed graph and explanation of cars versus cheese and their values.
And he gets all these comments like, what is the matter with you? And what is it? And he talks about some of the other things that he's measured up and compared over time. And I have to go back and look at it. But it was just so fascinating that you could calculate these values and compare them to each other that I thought it was worth sharing. Yeah. So I hope that you appreciate your fine cheeses a little bit more next time you have one there.
Yeah. I'm going to go into my car and find the equivalent cheese, because then I can find, like, you know, the car's spirit juice.
Yes, well, in that case, yes, it would be the Brie or the Cadillac Escalade, you know, one or the other there.
I'm driving a 97 Chevy Gouda.
Yes.
That would be great. I did have, you know, Don Rue, whose voice you hear at the top of every hour here. Don and I worked in radio together many, many years ago in Rice Lake, and he had just this old beater of a car, and the inside of it always just smelled like the moldiest cheese you could think of, except that it wasn't cheese. He had once spilled like a gallon of milk from the grocery store, had tipped over, had broken, and at some point beer had spilled again on the carpeted floor, and he never fully cleaned up either one of them. And so the combination of sour milk and sour beer gave that car something that maybe would resemble a Roquefort or, you know, one of these other high-end cheeses, but you wouldn't want to take a taste of Don's old Toyota. I promise you that.
What a lie.
Thank you for playing along. You're good eggs.
What a cheesy comparison.
That's what we try to do here. Dan Hagen from Newswatch 12, Brittany Merlot, thank you both so much. Have a great day.
You too.
Have a good day.
Oh, yes. Thank you. I see what you did there. I like that. When we come back, we'll talk about somebody announcing that they're going to run for governor next year. Another Republican wealthy business guy. Just what the party needs. More after this. You're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
One more from today's history lesson. Actress Elizabeth Montgomery was born this day in 1933, passed away in 1995, but best known as Samantha on the series Bewitched. So as long as we're getting into apparently old-timey TV here, which I guess Hee-Haw now counts as old-timey TV.
Oh, yeah.
Bewitched certainly has to be that as well, but I figure you were exposed to a little bit of Bewitched, you know, reruns or something.
Oh, yeah. Time. I feel very, very lucky to have grown up when I did. I was a child of the 80s, a little child of the 80s. So there were like 23 channels, 25 channels, and so much content had to be put on there that I just took in all these shows have been canceled for at least 15 years. So I got Bewitched, I Dream of Jeannie, The Monkees, My Three Sons, leave it, you name it. I watched those shows and they were all on because there was nothing else to put on these channels. So I got to see all the stuff that like my parents grew up watching as well. And now I feel like there's so much content kids. And of course, kids have almost no clue what those shows are because why would they?
Right. They can, everything is very tailored to your generation. Yeah. You're not forced to watch Hee Haw, Lawrence Welk, or whatever the case may be. The thing about Bewitched, and again, you could only get away with this back in the day when there wasn't like internet and a whole fan culture and everything, was that they had the one husband, Samantha's husband, played by Dick York,
yep,
for that first season. And then the second season, it's a totally different actor. Dick Sargent,
yeah,
is playing it. And like, we're all just supposed to go, oh yeah, that's the same guy. Sure. Same character.
They did that to us in The Fresh Prince.
They did?
Yeah.
Oh, they did, didn't they?
With, Aunt Viv was for like, yes, three seasons. Then all of a sudden, Aunt Viv was no longer. Is it? Yeah. And it changed. Oh, they changed her, you know, character style. Her. It was, yeah.
Roseanne, too, though. Roseanne, one of the daughters.
Yep. Becky.
Was Sarah Chalk, and I can't remember the other actress's name. But yeah, and then they actually then worked it into the show.
Yes.
And kind of, it was like a little Easter egg for the viewers, which I thought was very clever.
So, yeah. I really enjoyed actually the Connors since when they threw Roseanne off the show and they made the Connors there. They're on their final season. It's a good show. It was a good show.
Isn't it something how a workplace gets better when you get rid of the reason for the toxic workplace?
Yeah, you know, why should you have to deal with
that? Even if it was their name on the company, it's, yeah, like, no, we can do better without you. Let's talk about some of the headlines in the news today, including the story that a businessman is running for governor next year, or at least considering it. He's formed a political action committee. Molly Beck had the story over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about Bill Berrien, a Navy SEAL veteran and a Whitefish Bay manufacturing businessman, is considering running for governor and has launched a political action committee dedicated to, as he put it, help Republican candidates get back to winning after a series of losses in statewide races. Berrien's new group is called Never Out of the Fight Pack, which he says is inspired by a Navy SEAL team ethos. As Molly notes in the article, Republicans have really struggled to win statewide races that did not involve Donald Trump on the ballot. You had Ron Johnson, of course, winning thanks to a whole bunch of billionaires coming in and buying a lot of ads. Justice Brian Hagedorn won in a squeaker, and the state treasurer, John Lieber. But beyond that, again, you had a defeat for Tim Michaels running for governor last time, a wealthy businessman. You had Eric Hovde losing last year to Tammy Baldwin, a wealthy businessman. So now Bill Berrien, a businessman, says that he is exactly what the Republican Party needs to start winning again. And in his statement announcing the formation of this political action committee, he says, "We are passionate about the growth opportunity for Wisconsin with the manufacturing reindustrialization in the U.S. and President Trump's crackdown on China." He goes on to say, "We believe boys are boys, girls are girls, and parents should have a say in their child's education. We believe in restoring conservative values and common sense." Okay, sure, go with that, because let's go back and dissect that, shall we? The reindustrialization of the U.S. is not going to happen the way that it works in Donald Trump's fantasy, where if we just kick all the migrants out and if we have a trade war, everybody will bring their factories into the U.S. and staff them with who? Because we already have labor shortages in this country, and you've now chased away the migrant laborers. So how exactly does that reindustrialization work? And I know they'll say, well, there's a whole bunch of, you know, young men sitting on couches playing video games, and they're committing fraud. They're committing fraud by getting all these government benefits. Okay, maybe instead of running for governor, why don't you find those people for us? Because I have not seen much for fraud cases brought against people who supposedly are milking the system. If they are, in fact, out there, as fellow former Navy SEAL Derek Van Orden was claiming last week, let's see them. Let's see the charges brought. You don't seem to have a problem disappearing people without charges. why don't we see charges brought, or just we'll find in El Salvador a whole bunch of young men who want to know where the Nintendo is in this El Salvadoran prison because it's the only thing they know. Maybe you can't find that. Anyway, it mentions President Trump's crackdown on China. He's checking all the boxes here. He's anti-China. He's anti-trans. He's anti-public education. When you get this, parents should have a say in their child's education. They already do. It's called a phone. It's called stopping in and visiting your teacher. It's called attending school board meetings. So when you're saying parents should have a say in their child's education, we get the code. We've been able to crack it for some time now. And we believe in restoring conservative values and common sense. Trust me, there has been nothing in terms of common sense about getting rid of due process, disappearing people off the streets, launching a trade war that is only going to cause a recession and more. So while for all I know, this person, Bill Berrien, may be a very nice person, may be very well-meaning, may want to engage in public service, but based on this opening statement, if he's just going to run another Tim Michaels, Eric Hovde campaign, then I wouldn't be a bit surprised if a whole lot of other Republicans said, why don't we try a different direction this time, and let's just wait and see what kind of a primary field develops in the race for governor next year. We'll talk to Sean O'Malley about the bond market sell-off after this. You're up north. That one is Dave Edmonds, who turns 81 years old today. This is Up North News Radio. It's Tuesday morning, April 15th, and the Brewers are back on the radio this evening against the Detroit Tigers after getting spanked last night. We'll try to get back on track here. Coverage on several Civic Media stations. Head over to civicmedia.us for more. Coverage at 6:05 today, and it's a noon hour game tomorrow. So a little matinee baseball from American Family Field. All right, we're going to talk to Sean O'Malley here in just a bit and talk about the bond market sell-off and the tariffs. Sean has over 35 years experience in financial services. He's worked in anti-money laundering, operational risk management, financial risk management, data analytics. He's been a data governance officer at Citigroup, a research director for compliance and fraud management at IDC. He's worked with several of the big names out on Wall Street, the pride of Hudson, Wisconsin, who now joins us to talk again about trade and tariffs and stocks, and this time bonds as well. Sean O'Malley, how are you?
I'm doing well, Pat. How are you this morning?
I'm doing all right, but I'm also... how do I put this? I mean, there are people who are like every hour trying to move their money to whatever appears to be safe now. And I'm much more of a no place is safe. So I'm just going to kind of ride this out. But you kind of do this for a living, not financial planning, but you right. know about moving money. Have you just personally, have you found yourself busier than usual trying to make sure that your nest egg is in good shape?
Not myself personally, Pat. I tend to be fairly prudent about my selections. So I made some changes after the election to reduce my exposure significantly. So I can certainly sit out the entirety of Trump's term and several years after without being overly concerned about whether the values go up or down. I knew that there was the potential for a lot of volatility. And so I said, I'm not going to hang around for the volatility. I'm going to play it a little bit safer than that because I don't want to feel like, and I'm sure a lot of people do feel like they're trying to hop from one foot and like, you know, is now the right time to go in this direction or that direction, financially speaking, with your decisions. I'm sorry to say I don't have any words of comfort for anyone today.
No. And look, the conventional wisdom for, you know, amateurs, myself included, was, well, if the stocks are getting a little bit too risky, then you move things over into bonds. Or the term I always hear on, you know, channels like CNBC and others are, you know, flight to quality. Correct. And, you know, or safe havens or safe harbors. And mm-hmm. that almost always includes U.S. bonds. And yet we heard last week about how the bond markets were being rocked and bonds were being sold off. And that was finally the first time that the Trump White House seemed to be like, oh, is it us? Are we the problem? And maybe they're not going as extreme as they had thought that they were going to go. And in part, this sell-off in the bond market might have helped do that. So I wanted a little bit of background on you on, you know, what is it that makes bonds such a secure investment, and why do they seem less so now?
Right. That's a really good question, and you bring up an interesting point that I'll get to in a second. But first, let's answer the question why bonds are considered, you know, safer. Typically, especially U.S. government treasuries are what, you know, are the risk-free rate, if you will, in the investment selections that personal investors can choose from. So when you're talking about, you know, that flight to quality, which is used a lot, that basically is telling you, yeah, everybody's getting spooked by what's going on in the stock market, so they're reducing their stock exposure and they're increasing their bond exposure. So what you'll see happen is that the prices of stocks will go down, and the money will move from stocks into bonds. And so as the bonds get bought up more, their price goes up. So get it? Stocks go down, bonds go up. That's the typical pattern. Unfortunately, what we've seen, and this is of concern to several people who are even, you know, more knowledgeable than myself, who have very big positions on Wall Street, is that we are starting to see that stock prices and bond prices are moving in tandem. So when both stocks are going down and bonds are going down, that's usually a sign that you want to start paying attention, really close attention, because you're looking at a potential, you know, financial stressed situation. The last time this happened was like in the financial crisis of 2008, much more exaggeratedly than what we've seen now. But people are looking at it saying, well, we really haven't seen this sort of pattern for quite some time. And the fact that we are seeing prices move in tandem is of concern.
And that's all based in, you know, the volatility that we have seen here, in that what this really rocks, and something that we never thought would be rocked, would be this phrase: the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. Now, I know we often hear that about, say, the FDIC with bank deposits. But again, about U.S. bonds, the U.S. was seen as, you know, they pay their debts. They don't, you know, right. they don't break those kinds of agreements. But now you see what, you know, President Trump has done with, you know, contracts with farmers and everything with the tariff mm-hmm. situation, breaking agreements that he signed, like the USMCA with Canada and Mexico. And you start to see where other countries would hold U.S. bonds, but now they're looking at the U.S. and going, does the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, is it still a thing?
Right. And I think what you're raising is it's sort of like the tip of the iceberg. The larger issue is, given the political realignment globally for the United States under this administration, you now have a lot of, you know, former closest allies, thinking of, you know, Canada in particular, but also many of the European Union nations, they feel very alienated. They feel betrayed, let's be honest. And they're not sure that they can trust this version of the United States. So yes, what we're seeing is a pullback from what they would normally buy, because what's happening is that the world is starting to redefine itself in a business and trade environment whereby the United States, instead of being at the center of it all, we're just being circumvented. Everybody's working around us, not with us and through us anymore. And so that is one of the big reasons that we're seeing for big changes in purchasing. We're seeing big changes in terms of not just purchasing of bonds, but I mean purchasing of goods and services. And it will have an economic impact on this country that's it's not going to be positive, unfortunately.
And I guess that the term I'm looking for is overreaction or maybe overcorrection. I'm not sure. But for folks who are saying, well, what should the U.S. have done nothing? No, that's not ever what I've been saying. There's a place for trade negotiations and trade agreements. And I have said plenty of times that we should try to strengthen some of these trade agreements, because what I'd be saying to other countries is, if you want access to this market, and this is one of the greatest consumer markets on the planet, but if you want access to this market, you've got to play by certain rules. It might be about, you know, environmental protections or employee protections or things like that. So there's definitely room for it, but it's entirely different when you say, actually, we're going to slap 145% tariff on you, China. And small wonder that now, instead of wanting to negotiate with this, you know, great consumer market here, that they say, well, let's bypass this. Let's go to Brazil, get our soybeans there instead.
Right. The simple fact is that, putting it really bluntly, the United States has become too much of a pain in the butt to deal with, both politically and financially. Because there's no certainty with respect to what the future is, or whether if you make a deal today, is it still good tomorrow with this administration? You know, as you point out, yes, they continue to backtrack. There's a real lack of clarity, which is why, you know, I mean, the tariff situation with Liberation Day on April 2nd, you know, put them in place, stock market goes down a huge amount. And so a couple of days later, they take them off, stock market comes back, not quite all the way, because you still have a 10% tariff globally. And as you pointed out, China's at 145%. But what's the point of the tariff? What is the purpose? Right now, it's just acting as a tax. It's like trying to drive forward in your car with your parking brake on. You're not going to go as fast, and you're certainly not going to get the gas mileage. And a lot of other drivers on the road are deciding, you know, I don't think we want to be on the same road with this particular driver.
Let's address, you know, one of our more conservative listeners, Mark in Sussex, puts this on the text line, says, do other countries still respect us? Seriously? Over 130 countries now want a discussion on tariffs. Many agree some tariffs are good, but nobody except Trump had the guts to do it. Thanks, Trump, or thanks, Donald John Trump. So Mark in Sussex is making the point that Trump and others are claiming, is that now suddenly everybody wants to rush to the U.S., and make a deal with them. I certainly hear Trump saying that, like, everybody wants to make a deal with Trump now. I love when he talks about himself in third person. But I don't know that I'm necessarily seeing that. And you're saying that it appears everybody's trying to, you know, basically circumvent the U.S., at least for now.
Right. Yeah. The only person who is telling you that 130 countries are trying to renegotiate tariffs is Donald Trump himself. Mm-hmm. You will notice that none of those 130 countries are saying, oh, yes, you know, we're in the market to renegotiate our tariffs. I'm sorry to say that's just a fallacy. Not the first time that we've experienced that with this particular president.
Now, however, you do have some of these countries appear to have learned this much. If you do even the least amount possible, or maybe a little bit more than the least amount possible, to move off of, you know, status quo, that Trump will call that a victory, even though, again, it makes almost no actual significant difference. Yeah. But if he's able to prove that something came off of status quo, however little, he counts that as a victory. And it does not necessarily do anything to offset trade imbalances or consumer prices.
Yeah, absolutely. So what you're seeing is that there is this opinion that, you know, we're somehow going to get somewhere with tariffs. But again, tariffs have to have a purpose. We don't have a clear purpose behind these tariffs, number one. Number two, we have global tariffs of 10%. All that is a 10% tax on American consumers. Okay, so you want to know about what your inflation expectations are going to be? Somewhere around 10% is probably going to be a pretty good bet. It'll probably be a little bit shy of that, because it's not going to be everything. Some things are made completely domestically without any sort of input. But the simplified version that Donald Trump puts out that ignores international trade, how complex supply chains are. You know, it's not just, oh, you know, I bought this and it says American made on it. Okay, well, were any of the parts from a foreign country? Was the machinery that was used to make that, was part of it, you know, from a foreign country? You know, there are so many intricacies when you try to kind of disentangle everything. It gets to be a very complex picture. There are a couple of companies that have products that are designed to help you through this, but really only at a level one on supply chain, trying to get level two, level three, really all the way down this, you know, rabbit hole of where does everything come from when you're looking at final products, goods out in the marketplace. It's very, very complex. And I think people like the simplified picture. Unfortunately, that's not really an accurate picture. And we'll be finding out as I'm sure these 10% global tariffs will be in place and inflation will continue to go up and economic growth will be under pressure. It's probably not going to grow as much as it could have.
And even if there were 130 different agreements in the works here, it would take quite a while to get back to whatever we would call normal to undo this damage. Sean O'Malley, thank you again for all of the insight. It's always great catching up. And I sense we're going to be talking again real soon as markets and conditions continue to move. Have a great day.
You too. Take care.
All right. When we come back, we'll talk to Chad Holmes, find out what he's talking about next on his show in Wausau. And if you're not in the Wausau area, catch it on the Civic Media app. This is Up North News Radio, live from Chippewa Falls on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Coming up next on 98.9 WXCO in Wausau and on the Civic Media app, you can hear the Chad Holmes Show. And Chad Holmes himself happens to be with us now. Mr. Holmes, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good guys. How are you guys doing?
Very good, thanks. Let me just clean up one bit of business from our last segment, comment talking about why don't you talk about the Trump tariffs that Biden kept and even increased? And actually, I believe we have. I did not mention it in that past segment, but again, the whole thing is not all tariffs are bad. It's that there appears to be no strategy with this particular tariff, and it's leading to the impact that we're seeing right here. So again, to be clear, there's a role for tariffs. There's a role for trade negotiations. There's not a role for, you know, blowing up the entire system and assuming it's going to fall back into place. So that may be among the things that you hear on the Chad Holmes radio program later, or it may be whatever else is happening in the greater Wausau metropolitan area. What's happening out there?
We'll figure it out.
All right. Well, thanks for watching, folks. Everybody, thanks for listening.
I haven't done a literal double take like that in a while. I'm like, did I mute him? I mute him? No, I didn't.
No, I got some guests coming from a local theatrical production coming in later on. We talking about that. Gonna complain to Brittany about the weather, because yesterday I was off in Stratford doing a softball game, and I have never been in a spring sports event that was like that, where it was 40 degrees. My computer literally blew off my tail because I'm outside broadcasting.
Yes,
a couple of times it knocked me off the air. I mean, I've had to keep my hand on it or else it was going to fly away. Wind chills are about 25 degrees. So Brittany's going to get a firm talking to here this morning about getting some spring weather here when I'm outside, because I was bundled up. I had my winter hat on, my winter parka on. It was still cold. And yet, you know, it was dry, so the game went on. But, I mean, the wind was incredible yesterday. So we need a dose of spring. I need a dose of spring. I feel like, you know, we need a little bit of that.
I've been saying that for weeks, and I feel bad for Brittany, but I'm like, I've got no place else to put it except in the weather segment, because we're getting the worst of it in the sense that we're getting some snow flurries over here, but it's not enough to decrease the fire danger. So it's otherwise dry and windy. So you've got all these burning bans in place, and again, the reminder to everybody to be careful. and the wind isn't like, it's not like a hot wind that's, you know, spreading these grass fires and brush fires. It's a cold, there's wind chill whipped fires. That's the weirdest spring yet to have something like that.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just, it's crazy how this goes back, because I taught her every morning on the program, and some days, because there's a big tree right outside our window here that I kind of take a look at, so often it'll be just calm, because that's what you're supposed to be in the morning, supposed to be calm. You're starting off the new day, supposed to be calm. Man, there are other days that tree is just bending backwards and bending forwards, and it is nuts. And also, yesterday, I'm here, because yesterday was the start of something new around here downtown, because we have this major building project. It's called Foundry on 3rd. It's right across the street where the old Wausau Center Mall was. And they started to close down some of the streets here around our station. And literally, the building starts to shake. I mean, it was like an earthquake, because they are pounding into the road right outside. And I'm thinking, what is going on here? There's a little craziness going around here downtown. But it's exciting here, because it's been a long process. This Foundry on 3rd, it took a while to get going, but now it's been building, and it's been going up fairly quickly. Now the roads are going to be expanded right around here downtown. I think some exciting time.
It is, because for the longest time, I thought like my entire adulthood was going to be marked with, you know, just downtowns dying everywhere. You know, mm-hmm. It happened in Eau Claire, and it happened in all these other places, and Wausau, every place that tried the mall downtown, where that didn't work out necessarily. But now, when I look at the redevelopment in Eau Claire, when I look at what the Farmers Union has done to Market on River up here in Chippewa Falls, and now what's happening in Wausau, the redevelopment of our downtowns across Wisconsin is just so wonderfully satisfying to get that done, and hopefully continues to be done right, that they don't overbuild as well. And if you can stick the landing on that with any kind of downtown redevelopment, what a feather in the cap that is, because I really was concerned that our downtowns were just going to be these rotting husks for a lifetime, and thank goodness they're not.
Yeah, no, and I also though I'm curious to see how it does develop. I mean, in terms of we're in the process here. It's being done. Hopefully it is going to work well. I think that there's still a lot of unknowns as the future goes on. I think a lot of communities are trying to figure out exactly the right way to go about it. I think there are some areas that where the idea of a mall type structure still can work. I've mm-hmm. heard about that in other areas of central Wisconsin, but I do think what we're doing here in terms of the best way moving forward after the old Wausau Center was knocked down, I do think that I'm willing to say that I feel pretty optimistic about what they're trying to accomplish here.
Yeah, and again, I will say that for those folks who take those risks, who have that entrepreneurial drive to develop something, I think that's wonderful. I think I get dinged a lot as well. You're just, anti-business, and these people take risks. No. Want you to within a set of rules, within a set of standards. And that gets us into your buddy, one of the other developers there in the Wausau area. But we're out of time for that, so we're.
All I'll say real quickly to wrap it up. Yes, absolutely great for the developers to be able to be rewarded, but not in a case where they have no risk at all, because they want a lot of times where they just want to have it where if I win, I win. If I lose, you lose.
That's right. Yep. Put it all back on the taxpayers. Chad Holmes coming up next in Wausau and on the Civic Media app. Thank you, Chad. Talk to you a little later.
You bet.
Greg Bach is back in 2 hours for Matt and Air on Air. So hang around for that as well. And thanks to all of you for joining us on this Tuesday. Up North News is the Wisconsin outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. Sign up for our newsletter over at upnorthnewswi.com. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow morning here up north.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.